You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is a podcast where we talk all things Desperate Housewives. We recap the critically acclaimed show from ABC, early 2000s, and we take you through each episode in order that they were released, so we don't miss any of those mysteries, and we give our hot takes at the end. But neither of us are housewives, so we are learning some profound lessons from these ladies.
Yeah, definitely. And
yeah, Jordan told me that she knows somebody's grandma who's a, what did you call her?
Like a master homemaker.
Master homemaker. Yeah. It made me think of Brie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
She fitted a dress to you.
Mm-hmm. So I was in a wedding and I needed my dress hemmed. And it was like really flowy, so the hem was like pretty long because of that. Seriously, in like 5 minutes. Perfect job. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was blown away.
I'm over here and I can't do anything like that.
Put a sewing machine in front of me. I'd need to like YouTube some videos.
I'm scared of sewing machines a little bit because that needle is like, I'm scared of like my thing. Like, I know it doesn't happen, but I'm sure there's some horror movie where it does, where like that needle like gets your finger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They probably built some sort of safety into it now, but it's frightening. So.
It is frightening. I know. I hate it. It's very intimidating.
Yes, but we're not really, I'd say we're domestically challenged. Mm-hmm. I think we've gotten better. I can cook a little bit now.
I still don't cook, but that's because I'm spoiled. Yeah. My boyfriend does it, so I'm like, why learn?
Yes, I can cook now. I'm a cat mom, but the lessons we've learned from Desperate Housewives are nothing to do with homemaking. It's just about things not to do in relationships, thanks to Susan, and how to bury a body better than Paul Young.
Oh, yeah.
So we're super fans here. Jordan's seen it all. I'm watching this for the first time, episode by episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they keep getting better.
Oh, yeah. And I think, like, we're kind of in the last handful of episodes now. And so we're about to get some crazy stuff happening.
We're, yes, wrapping up the season soon. We're today recapping season 2, episode 20, called It Wasn't Meant to Happen, which sounds pretty ominous.
I know.
I'm a little nervous. But before we do that, we are going to recap a little bit, just briefly, what happened last episode, so you're not completely lost, because these seasons are very long. And then we're going to tell you some of our own desperate deeds to get you warmed up. And after that, we go into our full recap, and then we evaluate with a fuck, marry, kill, housewife of the week, and a 5-apple rating. Or that's the scale. We don't always give it 5. Rarely do we give it 5.
Rarely. I think I've only given 1 5 this season.
You gave 1 5 this season.
Have you given 1 this season yet?
I don't think I've given a 5 this season. Damn. The only one I've given a 5. Wait. I know I've given 2 episodes a 5.
I think they're both season 1, though.
They were both season 1, I think.
Yeah.
I particularly remember the one, like, about guilt, where Lynette has a mental breakdown about her addiction at the time.
Yeah.
But, yes, so maybe I'm hoping to get a 5 in before the end of the season. We only have 4 more episodes. 3 episodes. Like, the last one is split up into 2 on Hulu. But
well, it's crazy because, like, I know what still has to happen this season. And I'm like, we only have 3 episodes left.
They're going to be loaded. Yeah. I can't wait.
Well, because I was thinking about it and I was like, damn, like, because I kind of, like, I know what's going to happen. And, like, I don't know. I was starting to think, like, how did they fit so much in the last few episodes? But I guess we'll find out when we kick it off today.
Yes. Very, very excited to see what's going to go down. But, yeah, hoping for a 5. Can't have it every time. But, yes, last episode, episode 19, Brie has been really the star of this season. But she's been in this battle with her son Andrew over his desire for emancipation to get a car, specifically a Nissan X-Terra. So hot, 2006.
A Nissan X-Earth.
Yeah. So he wants this emancipation. They are in a legal battle. Carl is her lawyer. That's not very important, but I'd just like to note.
And yeah, you'd think they would do more with that. Like, why make him her lawyer if he's, like, never really in a scene?
I don't know. But they're at court, and it gets interrupted. They're going to go in for their hearing. And then her dad, who I guess is a lawyer, is like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to solve this by ourselves. And it's her dad, Bree's dad, and then her stepmother. Mm-hmm. So they are joining the family for a bit. They try all this forgiveness shit that isn't working. And then they decide that they're going to take Andrew back to Rhode Island with them because they think it's just going to work out better. Andrew hates her. And then Bree comes up with a plan because she sees Andrew speeding away and we don't know whose car. Mm-hmm. And Justin is like upset that Andrew's speeding away and left on the curb. And she's like, why do you love my son? What's up? Like, I know that you guys are friends. And he explains that Andrew doesn't take shit from anybody, but Andrew's also the worst. He hasn't mentioned, he's overlooking a few things.
Yes, he's avoiding some red flags for
sure. But Justin says that he just loves Andrew, doesn't take any shit from anybody. And Bree is like, can you help me out? Which he doesn't really help her out at all. I guess Bree could have done this all without Justin's help. Mm-hmm. Bree finds Andrew's gay porn mags. Mm. And puts them in a box so that her father will see. And the father does see. Grandpa Bree sees them. And he's like, what are these? He looks at them for way too long, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
And the stepmom comes over and she's like, OMG, this is gay porn.
He's like, just got to check every page to make sure.
He's like, I'm just going to examine these in the bathroom really fast. But they decide that they are not okay with, they're not down with him being gay and that he can no longer come live with them. And they do this by leaving him a note.
They also cancel his trust fund.
Yeah, and they get rid of his trust fund. In the note, they reveal they're getting rid of the trust fund. But they hate gay people so much, they sped away without even saying a word.
Yeah, that was pretty, intense, actually.
Yeah, but on the bright side, Bree invites Justin over for dinner.
Yeah.
And she is now fully supportive of Andrew being gay. So, mm-hmm. win-win-win there.
Yeah, worked out.
Yeah. Fuck Carol Burnett.
Yeah. She played a nasty bitch.
Grandpa Bree.
Yeah, Grandpa Bree. The most, clueless. He's in Beverly Hills Cop. I, recognized him last episode. It was driving me crazy, and he's the captain in Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, my gosh.
Just a fun fact out there.
Star-studded episode.
Yeah, they brought in the big guns this episode. We had three other housewives, actually. But the next one we could talk about real quick was Lynette. So she finds out from Parker's teacher that he offered a girl a cookie to see her vagina, which is very, childlike, confused, not in a creepy way, obviously, because he's six?
It's
seven?
Innocent. Yeah. If I heard my kid had done that, I'd be like, it was bound to happen.
Yeah, no, they get curious, right? So, she's pretty horrified by it, and she talks to Parker, and he said that a boy told him babies come from there, which is why he got super curious. So she tells him to ask his dad when he gets home. But she decides to tell him because he's like, well, I'll just ask the brother of this neighbor kid. And she's like, nope, not doing that. So I guess I have to do this. So she gives him a very sanitized version of it. Mm-hmm.
She tells him that seeds are planted in women. And yeah. He thinks about sunflower seeds or something.
Yeah. And they're coloring. She's drawing it. And
it's cute.
It was a very sweet
moment. She had a glass of wine.
Yeah. She's like, got some alcohol to get through this shit. But the next time we see her, she comes home and Mrs. McCluskey is babysitting and she is eating a fudgesicle and she tells Lynette that Parker offered her a fudgesicle to see her vagina and Lynette looks horrified for a moment and Karen's like, obviously I didn't do it. I got myself a goddamn fudgesicle. I didn't need to show my vagina for it. But she tells Lynette that you need to basically shame him about sex. Mm-hmm. And she calls Lynette a liberal idiot at one point.
That was my favorite quote of the episode.
It was pretty funny.
Live like a true liberal idiot.
Yeah. And so Karen's like, shame is how we keep the world going around, essentially. And she's kind of not wrong. That's how you keep kids in check. But Lynette can't do it. She can't bring herself to do it. She starts to shame him. And then instead she realizes that Parker kind of has obsessive tendencies. So she buys him a puppy to distract him, and he does not ask about sex for another 5 years?
Yeah,
or
3 to 5 years.
Yeah, so good for Lynette. She found a way, but now they've got a dog and they're already very chaotic household. So.
I know. Another happy ending, though. I feel like those are two happy endings. And then another person who went to court this last episode was Gabby. She was there over the custody of her new baby, Libby, that she stole from the hospital.
No, Lily. Libby's the mom.
Oh, Libby is the mom. Sorry. Her new baby, Lily.
Why would they name it Lily? Wait, now that I'm thinking about it, though, like, what?
She said it was her grandmother's name, I think.
Just a little close to the birth mother's name, but okay.
Yeah, so they name her Lily, and they have this new baby. They're jazzed. The judge is not jazzed that they stole it. They did find the birth dad, who was a 19-year-old brother of the bouncer.
Who's somehow still in high school.
Yeah, he's 19 in high school. Yeah, yeah. We don't really know much, but he's in Fort Lauderdale on spring break, so he doesn't make the hearing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, wow, so bummed that, like, I couldn't be there for the hearing. And they get to keep the baby temporarily, but they're trying to make it more permanent. And Gabby's there showing off the baby to all the ladies on the lane. And then she mentions that she's going to get a night nurse and a nanny and all the things. And when Carlos hears the word nanny, he, like, becomes a monster. Mm-hmm. He becomes a completely different human. He's like, what? He turns around from eating his burrito. Mm-hmm. He's like, what did I hear about a nanny? We don't use that language in this household.
He's like, if your knuckles aren't bleeding and bare, you're not really being a true mother.
Yeah. He's like, try and breastfeed her, even though you can't. He is being really crazy. He's like, we're not getting a nanny. You need to be like my mom. You need to work your fingers to the bone. What else do you do around here? Nature, God, nature, church, and science all believe that, like, motherhood needs to be this and that, whatever. He's just being crazy. And Gabby says that to him, essentially, and she's mm-hmm. like, okay, whatever. And then he continues to be a bad dad by not helping in the middle of the night at all when the baby wakes up.
Even though, like, they're not breastfeeding. Like, there's literally no reason for him to not
They
do
can
it.
Bottle feed. Yeah, he's like, I have job interviews tomorrow. And she's like, I already did, like, took care of this twice. It's your turn. And he's like, no. So then she enlists Yao Ming to help her out, which mm-hmm. she does because she's a little sweetheart. And then in return for that favor, Gabby gives her a gift card to a spa. And then heads off to yoga. Next mm-hmm. thing we know, Gabby is just being like, what's the word for it? Just careless. I guess I could just say careless. She's like yelling through the house, bye, Yao Ming, bye, Lily. She doesn't check if anybody's there taking care of the baby.
Or like wait for a response.
And then she goes to have lunch with Bree, and Bree's like, I just saw Yao Ming at the spa. And she's like, that's impossible. She's with the baby. She's like, no, I was like talking to her for quite a while. And then Gabby freaks out and heads home and is like, oh my God, my baby's just been here alone and like uncared for, and that's all my fault. And then we see her at the end of the episode doing yoga with her baby, and Carlos is happy to see this, and it looks like they're not getting a nanny.
I guess, yeah.
We don't know. We'll come back to that, but for now, Gabby learned an important parenting lesson.
Carlos is just so, like, hot and cold, man. I just, like, I love him, and then he does shit like this, and I'm like, what's your fucking problem?
Like, you're kind of annoying still. Yeah, I'm like, you're my hero, but no, wait. Mm-hmm. just momentarily, so.
Yeah.
Another somewhat happy ending.
Yeah. Our last and, yes, least housewife, Susan.
She doesn't even deserve a house in the lane.
Yeah, no. So this week was just another chapter in the Edie Carl Susan triangle. Mm-hmm. And basically this episode, so Susan shows up at Carl and Edie's to talk to him because she wants to confront him about him trying to fuck her at the engagement party. And Carl basically goads her and he's like, you want it. And she's like, you're sick. And she leaves.
And he almost flashes her.
Yeah, it's like very aggressive. So then, like, we see Susan in her kitchen, and she's received flowers, and Julie gets pretty pissed because there's, like, a note in there from Carl, and Susan tries to play innocent. She's like, I'm not egging it on, and Julie's like, no, fuck you, fuck this. You can go to the movies by yourself, because they were going to go to the movies together. And I kind of feel for Julie in those scenes. Classic.
I always feel for Julie.
Oh, yeah. Poor thing. She's just, like, going to be so fucked up at this rate. So later, Susan's at the theater by herself, and she sees Mike on a date, so she, like, panics and runs to the nearest man that's there by himself, and it is Kyle MacLachlan, a personal favorite of ours. We love him. And he is playing a man named Orson, and Mike walks up, and Orson actually goes with it. He totally pretends to be her boyfriend, rolls with it, makes up a story of how they met, And Mike kind of seems upset about it. Visibly, he is like, oh, does not like the idea of Susan being with another man, even though, like, some episodes he hates Susan's guts, and then others he's, like, buddies with her. So I don't really know.
Get a clear read on what Mike wants or needs, because he says, never speak to me again, and then she does, and he, like, listens to her, and I'm like, not hard. You don't have hard boundaries, it seems.
Yeah, no. So then Susan kind of tries to hit on Orson, but he has an actual date who rolls up, and Susan's like, oh. So later, Orson shows up at Susan's house because he has her wallet, right?
Yeah, she left her wallet when she ran away, supposedly.
And didn't, like, worry about it?
I know. I was like, how long ago was that movie?
Like, but how long did it take her? Did she even realize she didn't have her wallet?
That's how quirky she is.
No wonder she's broke. She doesn't have her wallet. She can't pay for anything. So he rolls up, and he kind of tries to ask her out, and she's like, it's complicated.
And she's like, let me explain the whole thing to you. He wasn't asking.
No. So it cuts to them having coffee or tea or whatever. And he's actually being a cool dude and listens and kind of recaps back to her everything that's happened, which to me almost felt like the writers are like, maybe we need to like refresh everybody on what's going on. But she does tell him that she has feelings for Carl again and that she is a terrible person. And he says, you're not terrible, but you are a sucker, which was like, thank you. Fuck yes.
Somebody reasonable.
Yeah. And he's like, Carl's a coward and he wants you to take the biggest hits and it'll all be your fault if you get with him and he breaks up with this woman. And very wise of him. Does Susan take his advice? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's pretty fucked up.
She goes and fucks Carl.
Yeah. So she meets up with Carl at a bar mitzvah, which was very confusing at first. And he's like trying out a wedding band for his wedding to Edie, which like Susan, like he's actively planning a wedding. Like, it's not like he's just like engaged.
He's like, do you think this is a good wedding band?
Yeah. He's like actively making like wedding decisions. Like it's like cake tasting and like doing all that shit. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's so weird, but he has the band play their song, which was, like, the most obvious
move. What song it was.
It was so, like, first of all, it was a stupid-ass song. Second of all, it was like, come on, Susan, be better than this.
Yeah.
You think she is going to be because she storms out. But the next thing we know, Carl rolls up to her front door. He tells her he's broken up with Edie. He says it wasn't just for her. It was about him being a coward. He had to do what was right. And I almost want to be like, Susan, is it too good to be true? Yes. So maybe, like, be a little smarter. But she invites him in for some wine, and they wake up in bed together. While they're in bed together, Edie calls Susan's house, and she asks if Carl's there. And everybody's kind of like, wait, why is she being so calm about this? And she hands the phone to Carl, and Carl explains that he's helping Julie with homework, and Carl tells her he'll go to the store for her. Turns out he's a fucking liar. Shock. Shock to everybody. Pretty wild that Carl would be the same character that he has been acting this entire season, but whatever. He basically tells Susan he won't leave Edie without knowing Susan wanted him, but now he knows, so everything's great.
he's like, just needed that clarity.
So Susan like throws him out and screams at him, and Julie's downstairs just shaking her head, and she tells Carl not to call her. And I just want to be like, Susan, your daughter's, like, gonna be traumatized by this. Like, what are you doing?
Julie's just sitting there eating cereal, and she's like, how predictable.
I'm also, like, I love this idea that Susan and Carl are just, like, hooking up midday.
I wasn't sure on the time of day, if it was supposed to be, like, because Julie's eating cereal, so I'm like, is it the next morning? But it felt like midday.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand, like, where did Edie think Carl had been all night? Because, like, I assumed they drank the wine at night. It wasn't clear.
So it was daytime when he showed up.
And then
I think it was midday. And I think that Julie was having, like, she was just eating. Like, she got home from school.
Okay, good theory. I was like, they really didn't do a lot of lighting for that. They didn't put any thought into that.
And this is where, like, maybe Carl is like the hotshot lawyer to the point where he doesn't ever work, but I feel like lawyers work a lot, so this is very confusing.
They're not that loosey-goosey, I can tell you that.
No, like Susan makes sense, and Edie does too to an extent, because she can schedule the showings or whatever. Yeah. She's a real estate agent, but like, I don't, like, what's happening? What is happening?
So that's what went on, and then I think Felicia and Paul had their own little war going on. Mm-hmm. Felicia just kept fucking with Paul to the point that he assaults her at the end. She puts some shortening on his front porch, so he slips. She tents his house for cockroaches. She almost sets him on fire when he's barbecuing. She's a little prankster, but nothing is working, and he assaults her at the end, and nothing really happens from there. So that's where we're at. But like I said, season 2, episode 20 today. You can watch it on Hulu or Amazon Prime. And now we have our own Desperate Deeds. And I remembered I thought of one the other day. Yes, I remembered I thought of one the other day. And I'll just go first. Sorry. Okay. I'm just taking it away. Jumping. Apologies. But when I was in college, I hooked up with this guy at a party, and I was wearing some sort of, like, boots, and I don't know what happened to them in the midst of, like, the hookup or whatever. It wasn't anything very serious, but I guess I was so desperate to get to class or still drunk the next morning, or I'm not even quite sure what was happening where I left a household without my shoes, but apparently I walked home barefoot. So I had to ask him to come back to, I had to ask to return to get my shoes at a later date because I felt like I really needed those shoes back. And I think it's pretty desperate to, first of all, walk home barefoot on a college campus. That's disgusting. I don't know who I was. And second of all, to have to go to this dude's house that I really didn't care about and be like, hey, I left my shoes there. A pretty integral part of every outfit. And could you put those out? And like, he just left them somewhere so I could come grab them, which I think was really kind of him, actually. In my heart, I didn't have to speak with him. But yeah, the shoeless wonder, that's me. I just thought of it the other day. I was watching a show called Human Resources. It's like a little animated show on Netflix, but like one of the main characters like gets too drunk and she's like, I only have one shoe. And I was like, oh my God, like what was I doing without shoes?
You're like, that should be a priority when leaving anywhere. Like, what was I thinking?
Your shoes should never be left somewhere.
No.
So, yes, that's my desperate deed. Just barefoot.
Yeah. Well, mine is also related to drinking. So Julia and I actually met when we worked at Disney World. Yes. Crazy, crazy, I know. So long ago.
Thanks,
5 years ago now, actually.
A long time, yeah. Oof.
Yikes.
I guess our program started in April or May. Yeah.
It started like right now.
Yeah.
Because it was right after my birthday.
Ooh, wow. Yeah. Was it weird. 6 years ago?
6 years ago. Yeah, you're right, actually, because I just turned 20.
Oh, my God.
And now, so everyone knows, I'm 26.
Yeah.
fuck. Jesus, time is flying by. So basically, there was a day where coworkers and I went to one of someone's apartment, and we were like super fucked up. And we stayed up all night, like, laughing and partying. And the girl's, apartment that we were at, she was actually one of our, like, leads or whatever. And I remember she, like, puked everywhere, and I, like, cleaned it up for her. Because I was like, and that was really gross.
Gonna make myself useful at this party.
Yeah, gross. But that's not the desperate deed. The desperate deed is I had to work at 7 a.m. the next day. Classic. Great decision-making on my end. It was actually the day that, remember when we did that, like, breakfast with Mary Poppins thing?
It was that day?
It was that day, yeah. It was that night.
It was the night after?
It was, like, that night, like, later that night.
Oh, okay, okay.
Because I just remember I was wearing that dress.
Yeah.
But, so, we're all hanging out. We get, like, fucked up. And it's, like, 5 in the morning. And I'm like, shit, like, I need to, like, sober up. Like, if I try to take a nap, I won't wake up. So, I need to just eat. So, there's an IHOP kind of by where, like we all lived, and I rolled up with a few of the people, and we're like trying to eat to like get nourishment, and I'm like, pancakes will do it, soak it right up. So I was like so drunk, I poured coffee all over my waffles instead of syrup, and I was sitting there looking
fatal
at
mistake.
It fatal, and we did not have time. Like, it was one of those things where it's like I had to eat now, so I was like, I can either not eat and die at work because it's Florida heat, gotta work outside. Great decision-making, Jordan.
Yes.
That just gets worse. But yeah, so I like forced myself to eat coffee waffles and they were really gross and soggy. And IHOP coffee is not very good. So it wasn't even like good coffee like flavor. And I did not puke, but I was extremely depressed all day at work because I was like sweating balls and it was the most miserable day of my life.
It probably smelled.
Oh my God. I probably smelled like booze and coffee, not syrup, but coffee. And like, oh my God, it was horrible.
I mean, but you made it through. Like, we can survive anything.
I survived my shift. I think it was like a 10-hour day too. And then I went home and died.
Yeah.
Like, I died for, oh like, 12 God. Hours.
I'm just thinking about, yes.
My body can't take that anymore.
I've done that. My body couldn't do, no.
Mm-mm.
No. I don't know what happens after you turn 25, but it's certainly, you can't be acting like that anymore.
No.
My body's tired.
You need, like, a recovery day now for things. I feel like if I take a trip, I need, like, a recovery day now. I can't just, like, go back to work.
I know some people who go, like, they're older than me, too, and they are just machines. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Good for them.
I know. I'm like, what's the secret? Mm-hmm. I need to know.
Yeah.
I can't even drink coffee anymore. Makes me too anxious.
Yeah.
It's just, as you get older, I don't really like this. I didn't sign up for this, but here we are.
Yeah.
Well, we did get a desperate deed last week that mm-hmm. we wanted to say, but we're just checking that it's okay.
Yeah.
So maybe next week we'll have a fan desperate deed, mm-hmm. but send us yours if you have any that you can think of.
Or like if you have permission, just any stories and you have permission for us to use it. We love it.
We love reading them. Mm-hmm. So yes, next week maybe we'll have a fan desperate deed, but other than that, we're going to go jump in to watching this episode. Mm-hmm. And after we do, we'll be right back. But we like you to watch safely because things are getting so wild at the end of season. So buckle up.
Buckle up.
Bree goes to desperate lengths to stay close to Peter. Carl leaves Edie and Susan tries to hide her true involvement. Lynette helps Ed add some romance back into his marriage. Gabby and Carlos finally meet the father of their baby.
Whew. You guys.
This wasn't even like, this was like a roller coaster, not a, like buckle up. Like we're talking like get locked in, like you're about to be upside down, like be prepared.
This might be the episode for me of season two.
Okay.
But how many of you guys just went right to that next episode because you needed to know what happened? Like,
it's tempting.
It's tempting because we're left with a lot. So much happened.
Mm-hmm.
And also, can I mention a shout out to Saddle Ranch yet again?
Oh, yeah.
We went to Saddle Ranch.
I kind of like, now we have to go back again because they went again this season.
When I saw that, I was like, we're going back.
Yeah.
We're going back for sure. They actually have kind of good food there.
I know. Yeah. I liked it.
Maybe the bowl is working now that COVID's over.
Yeah. Now it's like more interesting.
So, season two, episode 20, wasn't meant to happen. A lot of things shouldn't have happened this episode, mm-hmm. but we're going to take you through. So, we start off with Carl, which we left him fucking Susan, mm-hmm. getting kicked out of her house. And now, Carl is praying. And Mary Alice Young likes to just stick that knife in and twist it. And she's going to explain to us why Carl is praying. So Carl didn't pray often, but when he did, it was usually to ask God for help breaking up with women and to spare him the nasty drama that usually accompanied such callous and unexpected departures. Over the years, Carl had dumped many women, and not one of them had ever seen it coming. Every retreat was always meticulously planned, right down to the personalized stationery. Hence, his record of successful getaways from women who did not want to see him go. So, when he decided to break up with Edie, he prayed to God to let him yet again avoid the unnecessary drama. Unfortunately for Carl, God was in the mood to be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a little montage of him, like, sneaking out on women. And yep. I'm like, what a fucking douchebag.
He's a rat. He's a rat.
I can't believe he didn't have the balls to just sit down and have a conversation. But am I surprised? I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
But to see it in such harsh light, I'm like, wow. Carl fucking sucks. Certified. So, and then the personalized stationery, I'm like, what are you?
He's a rich rat. That's what he is.
I'm like, what's the guy from Sex and the City?
Which one?
I'm sorry, I can't. Don't
a burger.
Is he a burger?
He's like a burger, but with money.
But worse.
And a bigger ego.
He's like a better, okay, Oh, wow. This might be something for our overall season recap. We might have to compare characters from Desperate Housewives to other series.
We have to legally because Kyle MacLachlan's in both. So yeah, that's our connection now.
We're going to put them up against each other. I don't know who's worse, but he sucks. So the thing that happened is Edie wakes up and Carl books it in his little red Mustang. He doesn't even open the door of his car. He just fucking jumps in like he's in an action movie, and the car won't start. So he's already fucked. And I am excited. You're like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Edie comes out and is like, what the hell is this? Because there's a note on the bed, and she read it, and she quotes the letter, and it says, let's be honest with ourselves, we haven't been happy in a long time, which is not true because they've been planning this engagement.
It's gaslighting.
Yeah, let's be honest with ourselves. She's like, you can't like claim my feelings. Mm-hmm. So she says, who are you to tell me when I'm happy, you miserable son of a bitch? I've been ecstatic. And he's like, okay, I'm the one who hasn't been happy. And she's like, then why did you propose? He says, I don't know. She said, I told every woman in this town that we're getting married, and all you have to say to me is, I don't know. And he says, I'm sorry. She pushes him. She asks if there's someone else. And I said, Edie's eyelashes look fabulous. So, side note.
Yeah, she looks great.
She looks hot.
Yeah.
She's really the energy I want when somebody leaves me, but I don't have it. Like, she's just angry, and she's like, who are you to tell me this and that? And she's, like, such a strong woman. So, ladies, if you're looking for some inspiration, there it is. So, Carl can't answer if there's someone else. Edie's like, oh, my God. She grabs a garden rake or a hoe or something. She grabs something that will hurt him. And I like that, too. I like the threat. And then she approaches Carl's car, and it finally starts just in time. And he's like, he thinks that he's out of it. And he's like, yeah. And then he gets hit by a recycling truck or a garbage truck.
Yep.
Which is fitting because he's garbage.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome.
And Marius Young says, as he sat in his crashed car, he couldn't help but wonder why God had forsaken him. It never occurred to him that God might be a woman. Shout out Ariana Grande. Mm-hmm.
So ahead of its time.
I love this opening. It just gave me some life.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, we do our cute little intro of Housewives, you know, or I think it was a full intro, but do our little intro, and then we jump back to the ladies, and now we're at AA with Peter reciting the Serenity Prayer, which, whether you're an addict or not, I'm sure you've had to repeat to yourself at one point in your life, because it is good.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
Yeah, it's a vibe.
So the members of the Fairview chapter of AA ended with a prayer, and while most were asking God for help in resisting temptation, Brie was busy thinking thoughts that were downright sinful. So then we are done with the Serenity Prayer, and Brie is cleaning up, because when is she not cleaning, I guess, or cooking? And I am really tired of, like, I get that, like, Brie likes the opera, but this is, like, the 10th time this season we've spoken about opera, and I don't know any single flat person, young or old, that fucking goes to the opera, to be completely honest.
They have to be in, like, a big city or close to one, because there's,
like what
she's
opera?
She's so cultured.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm like, are they in New York City? Because, like, where else do you go see, like, a regular opera?
I don't know. I guess there's probably opera in LA. I just don't know anybody who's, like, actually a fan of opera.
No, and don't worry, the opera never goes away in the show, like, ever.
I mean, Phantom of the Opera, I can get behind it, but I don't do regular opera. Well, good. Okay, good to know. But she's telling Peter that she thinks that he'll love the opera, and I don't know what gave her that fucking impression, but it seems inaccurate.
They're very much a couple that, not a couple, but, like, their attraction is just, like, that they want to fuck. Like, I feel like they don't have any real anything in common.
He doesn't even look like a guy that she'd be into.
The only thing I can think of is that he's nice to her even though she's a drunk. Like, that's the only thing that he, like, has
going. He's, like,
going.
Not judgmental, but she's addicted to him.
Like, this flirting when they were talking about the opera just felt very, like, two people who just want to fuck because they don't have anything in common. You know what I mean? Like, it was, like, that forced banter that everybody does when they're trying to, like, make something work at the beginning, even though it's, like,
it's heinous. It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, right. And he, like, laughs at her. She's like, are you making fun of me? And they are. She says this in a flirty. It was flirty. It was
painful.
Not in a cute flirt. It was hard. Like I said, hard to watch. He's like, Brie, stop it. And then she's like, okay. And then she like leans in for a kiss. And then this dude comes in that I thought was a janitor. And he's like, what's going on here? And Peter's like, he's like very scared. And he says, I saw what you're about to do. And Bree, like me, is like, who is this person? Who's this janitor? And it's Claude. He's my sponsor. And she says, for AA. And he says, no, for SA. And he starts going in on Peter. What did I tell you? Avoid triggers. And what is she? She's a less trigger. And I said, I would kill to have someone call me a less trigger. What a high compliment. I'm a less trigger. I'm a trigger for less for you. And Bree's like, can you stop saying that? I don't know what that means. And then he tells Peter, give me your chip. Remember how low you were when you first started? This represents 12 months of hard work. Of you not giving into your urges. If you want to blow this all away on this woman, let me know now so I can stop blowing my time and working with you. And he says, I don't want to blow it. He says, good, then tell the pretty lady goodbye and you can't socialize with her anymore and do it quick because I'm hungry. So they go out to eat after. So that sets up a lot. But yeah. I'll let you tell us what happens to the rest of Bree's storyline. And it's fucking wild. There's an arrest. There's a scandalous party.
Mm-hmm.
But.
So, yeah.
I'm like scared of this story. It's so great, but like, what the fuck?
So, okay. So the next scene is when she visits Claude, right? The sponsor.
Yeah, she goes to the donut shop that he works at. Mm-hmm. He's not a janitor like I thought.
Yeah, no. I don't know if he like owns it or just works there. I don't know what the deal is. Because he does make a comment later that threw me. But so Bree visits him at his donut shop and she basically like demands that he like lay off of Peter and let him do his thing and let them fuck. And Claude is like, no, like, Peter will regress. Like, he needs me. Like, he does everything I say. And he, like, kind of goes on this weird rant about how, like, addicts are pathetic and, like, weak and losers. And I'm like, what is happening? And so Bree, so while this is happening, a addict walks in with, like, a bag of cocaine. And he, like, Claude also sponsors, like, coke addicts, I guess. And he, like, gives the cocaine to Claude, and he's like, I bought it, like, I don't know why. And he, like, kind of, he's got a very aggressive, like, approach to being a sponsor. And so he takes the drugs from the guy, and he continues talking to Bree, and that's kind of when he goes into the addicts are weak, and, like, they need people, and blah, blah, blah. So while this is happening, a cop, like, walks into the donut shop. And Bree is, like, feeling really fucking vindictive here, I guess, because she tells the cop, like, when Claude's not paying attention, she's like, so what is my obligation if I know that someone is in possession of drugs? And the cop just kind of looks at her. And
she looks at donut guy, Claude.
Yeah, yeah. So basically she rats him out. And a few days later, Peter is, like, on the phone with Bree, and he's, like, so shocked and upset.
He's, like, confused.
He's, like, how could he be, like, caught with drugs? Like, I thought he was clean. Like, what the fuck's going on?
Like, what?
And I have to say, this was a shameful moment for Bree because, one, getting someone arrested who probably already has priors, like, Claude's probably never getting out of prison.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably going to prison.
It was serious Andrew energy. Like, where does Andrew learn it from? Yeah. From his fucking mother.
Like, this is pretty twisted. And also, this speaks to the fact that Bree just has no respect for addicts because, like, Peter clearly needs this man. Like, that's what's kept him good for a year.
Yeah.
And, like, for her to do that is, like, such a betrayal of his trust. Like, that's the whole thing is, like, she wants to be there for him, but by doing so, like, takes away what he needs.
Yeah, she's, basically getting rid of all of his other friends and resources, which is an abusive tactic.
Oh my God, yeah, she's like alienating him.
Yeah.
It's scary.
And you see that in the rest of the conversation because she says that she can basically be his sponsor. And you're like, what?
Yeah, and he's like, you'll never understand. Like, he's pulled me out of some, like, truly, like, depraved situations. Yeah,
and your mind goes wild. You're like, what have you done, Peter?
I know. And so, Bree offers to be his new sponsor, which is, like, first of all, you can't be a sponsor unless you've, like, been a addict.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of it, because that's, the whole point is, like, they can mentor you because they understand what you've been through. So it's, like, this doesn't even make any sense. Like, And a sex addict definitely can't have someone he's attracted to be his sponsor.
Somebody of the opposite sex, or the sex that they're attracted to.
Yeah, this is, like, so buck wild. I'm like, what is happening? So, Bree tries to convince him to accept her because she has experience with, like, shitty men. And she talks about how Rex was a liar and George was a liar and a murderer. And Rex was also an adulterer. And she's like, as long as you're honest with me, you'll be surprised with what I could put up with. And I was kind of like, that's, like, not a fun way to enter. Like, that does not seem like a healthy relationship view. I don't know. Like,
okay. I'm like, way to make it all about you, Bree.
It was just weird.
I think she says that in the bathroom at the party, but either way.
Because it was before. Because that's what they're sitting in her dining room when she says that.
Oh, she said taking care of people is what I can do best. Let me be your rock.
Yeah, yeah. Which I have to say, Brie, you've actually been pretty shitty at taking care of people, if we've seen anything.
Like, wait.
You're good at, like, the physical care, but you're terrible at emotional, like, help, which is what Peter needs.
She just gasses him up, and then she's like, let me be your rock. And then she's, like, sitting in bed the next day and gets a call from him.
Yeah, so it's, like, I guess it's, like, late at night, and she gets a call, and it's from Peter, and he's, like, I need you to come to this place. She shows up. It's, like, an apartment, and this guy, like, naked man with a mask on.
With masks. I was, like, the masks.
I'm, like, well, okay, eyes wide shut over here, but.
Yeah, I thought, too. Yeah. I was, like, what's happening?
Definitely that was, like, an homage to that, but, Bree arrives and she's talking, like, the guy's like, oh, I don't know who Peter is. My wife, like, put this together. So he goes and gets his wife, and she's also naked. And she's, like, talking to Bree, and she's like, is your hair natural? Which there's no fucking way that's her natural hair color. And she says it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I don't believe it for a second.
She's kept it up over the years.
Yeah, I'm like, just say it. You dye it, sis. And then the girl's like, oh, mine is from a box. And she's like, I could tell. I was like,
what is the purpose of this scene?
I know. I was like, that's kind of rude, but whatever. So Peter ends up has been, like, holed up in the bathroom the whole time.
So he says.
Apparently. So Bree goes in there and she's talking to him and he's like, this is like the kind of thing that I would get myself into. Like, you have to understand this. Like, I want you to see, like, I wanted you to come here tonight. And Bree is like, no, I'm caring and I will help you the best of my ability. Like, I'm here for you. And I guess, like, that's all it took for Peter because they, like, leave together and, like, walk out of the party.
She's like, you can't possibly be turned on by this. And I'm like, way to, like, sex shame him, but whatever.
Well, that's kind of her thing, though. She did that to Rex, too.
I know. I'm just like, wow, okay, like, whatever. Just let him be into whatever he's into.
I feel like Bree is setting herself up here because, like, okay, she's already been cheated on by Rex. Like, a sex addict is 100% gonna fucking cheat on her. If they start fucking, he's gonna, like, get that insatiable, like,
yeah, I don't
desire.
Know what she's thinking. And then also I noticed that she was in her pajamas before and she got, like, fully dressed up, scarf and
how
all.
How long was he waiting there?
To go pick him up. And I'm like, go in your pajamas, girl. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she says, as long as you're just honest with me. And I'm like, I really don't think you understand what you're getting into, but whatever, Brie, but I'm obsessed that there was a sex party, that mm-hmm. she gets a sponsor arrested. Like, Brie is on a mission.
Yeah.
To get fucked by Peter for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk about another storyline that is just seared into my memory now. It's Lynette. And this was also pretty sexual, I have to say. So Tom and her are at work with the kids leaving and some guy comes up and is like, Ed wants us to work through the night. And she's like, we're not presenting for 2 weeks, so can't we do it tomorrow? And they basically establish that Ed is having marital problems. And so he's working all the time and he's, like, making everybody else work. They are hearing him fight on the phone with Fran, his crazy wife that we hate. And basically, Lynette has to stay, but Tom doesn't. And so Tom goes, and Lynette's the VP. And then this kid who even told Lynette that she had to stay late pretends that one of Lynette's kids, I think Penny, is his own. And Ed's like, oh, you can go home. And he's like, yeah, yeah. So smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see her next looking exhausted at work, and she gets an IM from Tom. I don't know if this is the same night or another night, but he's asking when she's going to be home, and she says never. And Tom says he's horny, and I'm like, way to get to the point, Tom. And she's like, what do you want me to do about that? And they do this, like, what do you want? What do you want? And then Ed messages her while she's not looking because she gets distracted. And then she writes that she wants to lick him from head to toe and accidentally sends it to Ed. And I feel like I haven't been there with a sexual message at work, but I've definitely sent messages at work to the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And it's been embarrassing. Yeah. So I felt for her on a personal level. And she goes into Ed's office. She's like, oh my God, holy shit. I didn't mean to send that to you. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It was meant for Tom. And Ed's like, no worries. And she's like, okay, cool. I'm just going to feel like a pervert now. And she's like, at least you and I think this is weird as fuck to talk to your boss about your sex life or coworkers, unless you are like friends outside of work, unless you've had like three drink dates, three happy hours with this person, then maybe.
Yeah.
That's my rule. But he's like, at least you and Tom have a sex life. And I'm like, wow, okay. Like, clearly starting a particular conversation there. Mm-hmm. Lynette says, we do the best that we can. He says, well, Fran and I are dead in that department. And he is like, or she says, you know, Ed, I don't want to pry, but if you're having problems, you don't have to be, like, resigned to it. And he says, hookers? I don't pay for sex. And I'm like, why?
He's like, Ed, whatever his last name is, doesn't pay for sex.
Yeah, I'm just like, what the fuck? And she's like, you and Frank could spice it up, get the old juices flowing. And then he's like, kind of like your message. And he's getting it. So they're going to try this sexting. This is old school sexting, I guess. So they are going to go try that. And that's that. So she says, hope our chat helped. Like, I'm going to finish there so we can all get out. Next thing we know, Tom comes into a meeting room and is like, are you staying late again? Or can I finally have dinner with my wife? And she's like, I don't know. Let me check with Ed. And he's asking if there's any luck with, she goes to Ed and asks if there's any luck with IMing. Mm-hmm. He says, I was chatting with Fran a while ago and asked her what she was wearing. And she said a yellow blouse. And she says, what did you say? And he said, I just had writer's block. And I'm like, that was the first part of the conversation, though.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, no. He, like, literally got one message in.
She's like, you're an award-winning copywriter. Like, you can't think of something to say. Mm-hmm. And Lynette takes the wheel and Ed gets called into something else and she starts like sexting his wife, which I was obsessed with. Mm-hmm. Because we get a what do you want to do to me? We get are you touching yourself? Can I do what I did to you on the honey? We get a couple key messages and I'm like, wow, Lynette is fucking there for her boss.
Oh yeah.
So I said, this is kind of hot. And then we move on to the next scene because next day at the office, Ed is looking ashamed or something. I couldn't even find the word for it, but I'm like, he's not looking like he's doing good. Mm-hmm. He's on his couch in his office. She says, did you have a late night? I hope you didn't. He said, it was horrible. Blew up in my face. Why would you tell her to bite my nipple off? And she's like, I didn't. And I guess that's what they did on the honeymoon. And she's like, oh, my God. And he's like, she found out it was somebody else who was IMing her. It took me 2 hours of pleading with her not to call the divorce lawyer. And I'm like, if she's always threatening to divorce you, maybe you should just let her go. But
this was like the second like crazy thing with her, too.
Yeah. So I told her that I'd fire the person who did it to me. And Lynette's like, oh, my God, you're going to fire me. And he's like, no, I'm going to fire Tom because I told her that it was Tom. And Lynette's like, I fucking literally just got him the job here. So now she's panicked and she's like, well, you can't do that. And if you do, we will sue you. Like, you have to find cause. And he's like, don't worry, I will find a cause.
And I'm he's like, I'll find it. Fuck. He goes like full, like does not smile. He went from goofy boss to like scary boss.
Yeah. Ed had a good acting moment. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, he fucking, I'm scared. Yeah. So
he wild. But
this was this was such a good storyline mm-hmm. to me. But
yeah. And it's setting up like we actually get like a multi-episode arc. For yes.
One. So if you want to,
I can dive into Susan next.
Yeah, Saddle Ranch.
So we kind of got the intro to the storyline with Carl escaping or attempting to. After he hits the garbage truck, the next time we see kind of the story move is when Edie is getting comforted by all the women and Susan is looking like a scared mouse and being super obvious that she might know something. And it's strange to me that Edie doesn't pick up on it because I do feel like Susan's very obvious this whole episode, but whatever. So I found this very strange, but the women are all in there talking about how shitty Carl is, and then out of nowhere, they just go in on the whoever the other woman is.
I know. They're like, fuck that whore.
Yeah. They're like, she's a slut. Like, these women just walk around being whores.
Homewrecker.
I was like, what the? This might be the most dated part of any episode. I was just so taken aback by how hard they went in on this other woman. And I'm like, first of all, knowing Carl, it's actually probably really likely that, like, obviously not Susan, but if I were, like, in Edie's position, I would just assume that Carl lied. Like, so this woman probably had no idea. Yeah. I don't know. I would just assume
that. I don't know why she's like, I need to find the woman. It's like, I don't know. I know. Your guy was pretty sketchy.
It was just super weird. So I was like, okay. I was just, like, very thrown off by how aggressively they slut-shamed this other woman. But I guess it was for the comedy of, because Susan's standing right there.
Yeah.
And she kind of tries to be like, well, we don't, you know, who knows? And she gets all timid and all the women are just like giving her the death glare. And she's like, we should give this, you know, who knows what Carl was doing and all this shit. And then finally she's like, she's a dirty whore or whatever the fuck she says. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Like, like, I feel like it's very obvious.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that moment should have just been the dead giveaway.
I know.
So then, like, Edie and Susan kind of get, like, buddy-buddy because Susan's, like, trying to avoid Edie finding out that Susan was the other woman. And Edie takes Susan to, like, a Hooters or, like, whatever.
Not Saddle Ranch.
But it looked... Did they have the servers like that, though, in the last time? Maybe they just filmed it there.
But it definitely is Saddle Ranch.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, like, the servers are all wearing, like, very Hooters-type outfits. And I had to laugh because there's this moment where Edie goes, we've come here hundreds of times. And I was like, what? I just feel like they wouldn't go there, but okay. So they're there, and, like, Edie's being horrible to their waitress. Just, like, ordering one thing and then, like, calling her out, saying she sucks and, like, didn't bring her what she wanted. And it was just, like, really whack. And so Susan's like, what's happening? And she's like, why are you torturing this woman? And Edie's like, oh, that's who I think Carl's, like, having an affair with. And Susan's like, why? And she's like, because we've come here hundreds of times and they always flirt.
Hundreds of times.
And I'm like, okay. And so, like, Susan's, like, getting visibly stressed because she doesn't know what she should do here. But she kind of tries to start to talk Edie out of it, but then realizes if she does that, it's going to give herself away. So she tells Edie that the lady just, like, spit in her food. And so Edie's like, do you have my back? And Susan's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And so Edie just, like, straight up attacks this woman, like, punches her, trips her. And then, like, two other waitresses get involved and she's like, Susan, help me. Cause she's, like, getting beat up by these, like, huge boobed women just, like, attacking her.
Yeah.
In their little outfits. I was like, wow, you know that, like, this scene was put in so all the husbands that were forced to watch Desperate Housewives could have, like, something
into it. Yeah. Yeah.
So the next time we see them, Edie, like, comes to Susan's house and, like, thanks her. And she's like, when I said that you were, like, a sister the other day, I didn't mean it. And she's like, but now I do.
I mean it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, like, while they're talking, this, like, car drives by. And Edie kind of says, oh, I have to go because the car, like, is going to her house. And she doesn't tell us. Does she tell Susan who it is?
No. I don't think so. Okay, no, yeah. She's like, gotta go. And yeah. Then she doesn't say anything.
Okay, yeah. So basically, like, Susan should probably start getting nervous because Edie's up to something. And yeah, so the storyline was really, it kind of harkened back to me the episode where they, like, dumped the ashes together.
Yeah.
Like, yet again, Susan, like, fucked over Edie's life.
And, but, like, not as dramatic because of the ashes she did. Have a big reveal, like, I set your house on fire. But this one reminds me of, like, they went to Saddle Ranch once before
because Mike was that girl that was staying at Mike's house, Deirdre's sister.
So yeah, that reminds me of, like, season one energy where they were, like, more friendly. Yeah. Not necessarily frenemies yet.
I do think, like, this made me feel like something that's been missing a lot from this season is the Edie Susan dynamic up mm-hmm. until now, because their dynamic is really interesting and honestly makes Susan more interesting.
Yeah, it's more tolerable. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't hate Susan this episode, like, even though she's trying to cover her ass, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it was like fun to watch. It wasn't like Susan is fucking stupid. I was like, she's having fun. Eating makes her fun.
Yeah, for sure. So like, I don't know. I liked watching their scenes together, even though it was like the storyline isn't my favorite. I did enjoy this twist on it.
I liked being back at Saddle Ranch with the wings. Yeah. But last but not least, we have Gabby. Well, not last, but our last thing is going to be pretty short. But Gabby and Carlos are still dealing with the baby daddy, and they're out taking the baby on a walk, and Gabby puts a little hat on her and, like, is being just a cute little mom. It's like, I need to accessorize. I want the neighbors to see how happy we are. And then this guy in a Letterman jacket comes up, and he's like, hey, that baby is cute. She's got my eyes. I'm Dale the baby daddy, BT dubs. And they say people have been looking for you. And he says, I got held up in Florida longer than I thought. I got the message while I was wasted. And my friends were like messing with me. It's just like fratty stuff. And they're like, good thing he's here because we can take you to the lawyer's office and you can sign over the custody to us. And he says that he's going to want the baby. And everybody's worried. And so to deal with this, Gabby and Carlos run away from Dale. I don't know why they thought this was the best option. They run away with the baby. And he's like, you don't have to make this ugly. You're trying to take our baby. This will be ugly. And he's with his brother, Frank. And they're kind of in a car, like, shadowing them at this point. And she says, we were granted custody. You need to talk to the judge. And then Julie is comes out of nowhere and it's like, hey, can I see the baby? And I'm like, does it look like you can see the baby?
I was like, so random. I was like, what the fuck?
And they say no. And then Dale tries to take it. And he's like, well, Frank tells him to take it. He says, I'm not going to kidnap the baby. And he says, it's your baby. And Carlos squares up. And I was like, dang. This is, whoa, Carlos. Yeah,
and Gabby's face when he does it. I'm like, yes.
And Dale is like, oh, it looks like you're doing a good job. And he just runs away. And I was like, that was okay. I was feeling ways I didn't think I'd feel. But next thing we know, Mary Alice Young is voicing over that about more about Dale. Dale Helm, is like all the students at his Christian Academy. And he was taught that his future was safely in God's hands. What he didn't know is that Gabby was about to force a fumble. So I guess Dale goes to a Christian academy on top of everything else. He's a 19-year-old quarterback at a Christian academy.
With a brother who works at a strip club.
Interesting.
I'm like, what is the deal with their parents? Like, I need to know.
I need to know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. But she tries to interrupt the pep rally to talk to Dale. And they go out into the hallway and they're arguing about the baby. And she says, what's going to take to give up the baby? And he's like, it's not going to happen. And then he's like, I got to get back to the pep rally. I'm the quarterback and it doesn't look right. And she's like, car, paying for college. What do you need? And he's like, nothing. Like, I'm the quarterback and like, I can get into the college of my choice. And she's like, so why do you want to be a dad? These are your glory days. And he's like, I know, but Frank said once I get the baby, he's going to take it off my hands so that Libby will see him being mature and will want to get back together with her. And so they're basically using the baby as a bargaining chip. And she's like, just do the right thing and sign the release papers. And he goes back to the pep rally and then they're praying. And while they're praying, Gabby gets the microphone and she makes a whole speech about how they, like, good Christians wouldn't get a stripper pregnant. And she'd hate to if somebody found out that somebody here did, because they could lose their scholarship. And Dale is scared and he signs the paper. So she goes home and she gives the paper to Carlos and everybody's happy and woohoo, but that is not the end. Gabby is just vibing with a baby one day and the doorbell rings and it's the cops and they have a quarter to take the baby into custody. And she says, it's a mistake. We have the paper. And they say the birth mother is protesting. And until the adoption is finalized, she can change her mind as she pleases. And Gabby is pissed, all caps. And then she sees Frank and Libby out on the street in their car, just looking ratchet. And she's like, you don't even want to be a mother. And she's like, Frank could use him and he's got a good job. And I'm like, this girl sucks.
She's like, we're going to give it a try. The family thing. I'm like, This is a human being, you psychos.
And she's like, we'll give the money back. She's like, I don't want the money. I want this baby. And she's like, Carlos, what's happening? And this is the best acting we've seen all season. Gabby killed it. And she's like, this is our baby. And she has a mental breakdown. And even Libby is moved. I said, even
she had to turn away.
Libby is crying. So it's too late to take her. We've already fallen in love are the words we end on.
That,
so.
I just got the chills. That made me tear up a little bit. I was like, damn, like, that's so sad.
It was. Especially to see, like, so shit.
This is the second baby that Gabby's lost this season.
Oh, my God. We've been losing babies all over.
Like, she had to suffer through a miscarriage. And then now this, like, a double whammy of, like, having a child taken away from her again.
Yeah.
Like, that's really traumatizing in 1 year. Or it's not even been a year. It's been, like, what, 3 months? Because of this timeline's all whack.
I know.
It's been a year since Mary Alice died, so.
It's upsetting. Mm-hmm. Something also upsetting is another death plot. So it starts off in a funky way.
Mm-hmm.
Betty is showing their house and Matt rolls up. He's like, what's going on? And she's like, our house just sold. Start packing. And then Matt and Danielle are talking, next thing we know. And they're talking about putting Caleb in an institution. That's where he belongs. And then Matt's like, my mother would never let us. Like, I don't know. And Danielle's like, call the police. So it's not up to her. And he's like, if I do that, my mom could go to prison and I could. And like, this really sucks, doesn't it? He tries to hold her hand, and Danielle is a bitch and is like, no, because she's not getting her way. And I'm like, wow, I hate both of these people right now.
Yeah.
And he's like, if I move, I promise to call you every day. And she's like, I don't need a phone, buddy. I need a boyfriend. He's like, calm down. Don't tell me what to do. So we see how this is going. We've all been in a fight like this before. And she says, I could call the police myself. And he's like, Danielle. And Danielle is a bit crazy in a different way than Andrew. But she says, I just love you so much. I'd do anything to keep you here.
Again, now we kind of know where it comes from, though, because we literally watched Breed. It's kind of some same shit. So,
oh, my God. This family is the worst. Mm-hmm. So she says, you can't leave me alone here. You have to think of something. And he's like, I will. And then Caleb is doing something innocent and just like playing with glasses or something. And Matt's doing chores. And he is like, who are you going to miss the most when we leave? And I'm like, this guy didn't have any friends. He knew stored him in a basement. Like, who do you think he's going to miss? And he's like, I know you're going to miss Danielle. Did you say goodbye to her? And he's like, no, Danielle doesn't like me. And he's like, Danielle likes you. And I said, what? That's the biggest lie of the season. And Matt says, she told me she'd be really sad if you left and you didn't say goodbye. I feel like she'd even like a little kiss. And I mean, Caleb is on it. He's like, she doesn't like me and she would get mad.
Yeah. He's like, she doesn't even like me in her room. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I talked with her about that. She feels bad. But if you come into her room again, she won't be mad. And I said, is Matt evil? And Kayla, he says, and Caleb, she's going to act like she doesn't want you to kiss her, but she does. And I was like, okay, way to set up a rape, you asshole.
Yeah.
So Caleb is now sleeping, and Matt comes downstairs and he's like, Caleb, wake up, it's time. And Caleb runs over to Bree's house and goes into Danielle's room, and she's brushing her hair yet again. And Bree hears Danielle being attacked and grabs her gun. And I'm like, okay, I can get behind that. Mm-hmm. And she sees what's going on and fires a shot through the roof. Like, she's not going to have to repair that later. And she's like, get away from her and pick up the phone and call the police. And then Danielle's like, no, Matt and his mom have been protecting him. And Bree's like, I don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then Danielle's like, I love him. And then next thing we know, Betty is around and she's like talking to Bree. Bree's going off about the agreement off. If I hadn't been there, like, shit could have got fucked up. And if he's not gone by tomorrow, I'm going to call the police. And Betty's like, he will be. Don't worry. So then Matt goes to check on Danielle and he walks in the room and she smiles at him and she's like, did it work? And he's like, perfectly. You did great. And then they fuck, I think.
Yeah.
We didn't see that. But so then dun, 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 we get some rates on mental hospitals. That's what Betty's doing. And, oh no, that's what Matt's doing. And he's like, there's one that looks okay. And then Betty pulls out this bottle of Barbitol and is like, so we're going to like kill your brother. And Matt's like, OMG, like, no.
He's like, this did not go the way I expected it to go.
She's like, I promise I'd never institutionalize him, so we're just going to kill him.
It's not funny, but it's like, Jesus, like, okay, quite the leap.
So that's that. And then at the end, Mary Alice Young takes us out. She says, there's a prayer intended to give strength to people who face circumstances they don't want to accept. The power of the prayer comes from its insight into human nature, because so many of us rage against the hand that life has dealt us. So many of us are cowardly and afraid to stand up for what's right. So many of us have given into despair when faced with an impossible choice. The good news for those who utter these words is that God will hear you and answer your prayer. The bad news is sometimes the answer is no.
Pretty great episode. A lot of shit happened.
That was...
We went from not a lot this season to like, boom.
I was like, this season sucks. Yeah. And then I watched episode 20 and I was like, whoa.
I have to say, for the first chunk of the season, Mark Cherry was not involved.
Oh, okay.
But he did help write this episode. I don't know when he officially joined the season again, but like, you can tell like that when he's in the writer's room and when he's not.
Powerhouse in the writer's room.
I mean, he created it. He knows the characters, and it's just, he has a better vision, and you can tell the quality goes up when he's back.
Yeah.
So
we're back at it, but we can just start with our fuck, marry, kill.
Can I do a double murder?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to kill Matthew and Danielle.
Oh, great choices.
Because I really don't like this shitty Romeo and Juliet thing they're trying to do.
Yeah.
I think, like, even if their goal was to get Caleb put away, like, this is horrible because they're literally making everyone think he's, like, a rapist. I'm like...
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it was just so... Like, you have to be the lowest of the low to, like, trick a mentally handicapped person.
I know.
Like, that is, like, so sickening.
Who you're related to.
Yeah. And obviously, it's also sickening what his mom is, like, her solution is, but at least, like, hers is coming from somewhere of, like, some realist.
I don't know. Betty's just desperate.
She's desperate. But, like, they're, like, stupid-ass children.
Yeah.
And, like, so, yeah. Bye. Kill him. I would marry... Fuck. That was the only one that I was, like, locked and loaded on. I would probably marry Carlos because I liked him in this episode.
Squaring up.
I like the squaring up, and I like how he's very much the calm for Gabby's, like, mm-hmm. I like that he allowed her to kind of freak out and just, he didn't even tell her to stop. He was just, like, holding her.
Yeah.
And just, like, let her, like, freak. And I was like, I liked that because sometimes you gotta freak and you need someone to make sure that, like, you just don't murder someone while you're
for
doing
sure,
it. Like, assault a cop, which he probably would have if he wasn't there.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so I'd marry Carlos and then fuck... probably Lynette, because she's got some interesting words, so she might be good.
She knows how to work.
Yeah,
the,
she knows what she's doing.
Okay, I have a different approach because I agreed to double murder Matt and Danielle, which I didn't think of till you said it. I was likely going to kill Ed.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to take a different approach and fuck Ed because he clearly needs it.
He'll be like a very giving lover.
Yeah, I think he just like forever. Really needs it. And then maybe he wouldn't fire Tom. And I will also marry Lynette. I was going to marry Tom, but we didn't see much of his way with words. Mm-hmm. But I know that Lynette has a way with words. So she could just sex me all day. Mm-hmm. I'll marry her. She's
I like it.
Trying to stand up for Tom, mm-hmm. threatening her boss.
I know. I was like, that you're right.
Going on a limb, mm-hmm. like for her boss to help him.
Yeah.
So I'll have to agree to marry Lynette. My only difference is I'd fuck Ed because he needs it. And then we agree on the kills. And next we have Housewife of the Week.
I kind of want to nominate Lynette. For the reasons you just said, I didn't even think about, like, that was a bad bitch move to just be like, fuck you to her boss, like, we'll sue your ass.
Yeah.
Like, that was a stand by your man moment.
The only other one I could think of was Gabby, but she didn't really do much besides threaten somebody, but...
And she didn't win.
Yeah, and Lynette...
She didn't technically win, but she's more
well,
ahead.
Well, Lynette could have gotten Ed fucked if he had just held it together and let his wife bite his nipple.
Yeah. Lynette played everything correctly.
Like, it seems like Ed's a little sensitive. Like,
oh, really?
Why did you let her bite my nipples?
Like, she's like, I don't fucking know what you guys did on your honeymoon. You did,
but your wife clearly wanted to do it. So, okay, Lynette, housewife of the week. Gotten the most this season, I think, so far. She's been a lot of housewives of the week.
Yeah.
And now we have our 5 apple rating. I mean, I'm pretty ready.
I think I'm ready.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, 4.75. It's got the 5 for me.
I knew. Yeah, this was the episode.
I
was just
vibing from the moment I saw everything happen. I was like, this is the best episode ever.
I love that this was a 5 for you. I was like this close, but I think a 5 is coming for me. So I'm like,
yeah, I don't know what's coming, but there might be another 5 in the works. But
the only thing I'm going to dock it for is that there's no Andrew, which I thought I would have loved to have him in this episode just to kind of react to everything that like Danielle and Brie are doing. Yeah. I think we kind of missed. I like his perspective in the episode. I like his energy, even though he's evil.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily like it didn't clearly dock it much. That's really kind of the only thing. And Mike a little bit, just because they kind of set up that Mike was coming back into the fray last
and
episode.
And Orson, like we introduced this dude. And then
who's played by like a notable actor.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I do feel like they set some stuff up, but I know, like I said, I know what's coming. So that's also part of it, but it's still excellent, excellent episode.
Yes. Great up stuff. There. But I mean, you guys, like you have to admit we're in a completely different ballpark with this episode.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it was a 5 for me. Although we were missing Paul, Mike, Zach, Orson, and Andrew, I felt fine about it. Because I finally got something from the Applewhites that I was, like, waiting for. And we, once again, have murder on the table. Mm-hmm. And
mercy kills, I guess. I don't even know.
The sex party, Saddle Ranch, these, like, outlandish places that we've taken them. I like that we're getting out of the neighborhood a little bit. Like, I feel like that's been the problem. We've been stuck in the neighborhood all season.
Yeah.
And now we've got some different sets going on. And I'm like, thank God. Like, we're doing something. So I was just so impressed and it made me laugh. It made me get teary eyed. Like it made me, there were just a lot of emotions. So 5 for me. And then, other than that, we're at the end. We're so happy that you listen to us and join us weekly. Hopefully we drop every Monday. Mm-hmm. So we'll be back next Monday with another episode as we inch closer to the end.
Yeah.
And we like to hear from all of you. We were jazzed to get a desperate deed the other day. We like interacting on, if you want to comment or have a response to any of our stories and posts on Instagram. Somebody was really excited about our Fit Inspo Friday. They put us in their story. I like was like, wow,
it's exciting. I like
anything
it.
We're happy to just interact with you. And other than that, we drop Monday, Instagram, Twitter. We have a website, email. So however you'd like to reach us. But, and like, follow, subscribe, all the things.
Do it all.
But we leave you with our words of wisdom now to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.